weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Yeah. Whatever happened to the values of humanity?
My conscience like a crying child, locked the doors behind me, put the pain on fire, broken like a window. I see my blindness now, and I need love, not some sentimental prison.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new report from Human Rights Watch accuses the Coca-Cola company of profiting off child labor in El Salvador. The report details the widespread use of children in the sugarcane fields of that country. Up to 30,000 kids as young as 8 are involved in the backbreaking work of planting and harvesting, for which they are paid little and receive no medical care when injured. Coke drinks are made from the sugar processed from the cane, but the company does not own or deal directly with the plantations. Human Rights Watch hopes the company will use its power and influence to force Salvadoran cane farmers to comply with labor law, which in El Salvador sets the minimum working age at 14.
After contract negotiations fell through, more than 1,500 members of the United Auto Workers Local 997 walked off the job on Thursday at two local Maytag plants in Newton, Iowa. Maytag's corporate headquarters is based in Newton and employs 10% of the city's residents, now out of work due to the strike. At issue is healthcare retirement benefits and Maytag's proposal to continue massive layoffs. Downsizing hundreds of salaried employees is part of a national corporate restructuring program, in addition to the 1,300 people laid off in the past year and a half. Maytag announced that it knew the work stoppage was coming and built up a surplus inventory. Local president Pat Tweed speaking from the picket line at the plant gate.
Maytag and UAW were a valuable part of this community, and, you know, we're a majority of what this community is about as far as the commerce and people spending money and buying houses, cars.
Workers are hoping for a speedy resolution, unlike the last major strike at the Newton plant in 1971 that lasted for 5 months.
Victory for banana workers in Colombia. A two-week strike of 16,000 at plantations there ended yesterday when the growers agreed to allow farm workers to remain employees. They'd gone on strike to protest a proposal that would have classified them as seasonal workers and made them more susceptible to hiring and firing at the whim of a plantation owner. Banana planters and pickers will also receive wage increases, including adjustments for inflation. This staves off a potential shortage, as Colombia is the third largest exporter of bananas in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report by the U.S. Department of Labor suggests that more jobs are lost due to domestic competition than to workers overseas. According to the Labor Department, of the 200,000-plus jobs lost in the first quarter of 2004, only about 4,600, or 2%, were due to offshore outsourcing. But the report didn't include small-scale layoffs in its numbers and relied on management to accurately self-report their figures.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, the thrill of this year's thoroughbred horse racing season. I'm not talking about the fact that the thrilling, strong-hearted Smarty Jones made a run at being the first horse to win the Triple Crown in 26 years. No, I'm talking about the thrilling breakthrough made by the jockeys during this Triple Crown year. A group of them filed and won a federal lawsuit that allowed them to advance the cause of horse racing by, prepare to be thrilled, wearing corporate advertising on their racing pants. Is this a great country or what? It's not as though horse racing is a virgin when it comes to the corporate hustle. At the Kentucky Derby, for example, Ford is the official car and Crown Royal sponsors the official party. Also, the Triple Crown is now branded as the Visa Triple Crown. But until now, jockeys were logo-free, and the focus of the race was, well, on the race. But, claimed the lawsuit, if the stars of NASCAR and the PGA can plaster their outfits with ads, why not jockeys? It's a First Amendment issue, they told the court. Besides, corporate ads could be worth $30,000 apiece to them. This is Jim Hightower saying, you will be relieved to know, I'm sure, that not all standards of tastefulness have been trampled by this ruling. For one, jockey pants at the Derby cannot promote gambling, which strikes me as a bit odd, since the gamblers support the race, betting takes place right at the track, and the media openly touts the gambling odds and broadcasts the winning bets. Also, a jockey's corporate ad cannot conflict with the track's own sponsors. No Chevy logos, for example, at Ford's Derby. Again, a bit odd, since the case was said to be about free speech. Finally, the ads cannot be, quote, inappropriate. That's a bit vague, but I guess this would rule out promos for glue or horsehide furniture.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
You think I'd maybe had some Bush's phases, maybe, please? I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy. Shoe Dog.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone. Our air conditioners with Pure Run refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound. No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. For a limited time, save up to $1,000 on select Carrier systems. Call 1-800-CARRIER for a dealer near you. Some restrictions apply. See participating dealer for details. Carrier. Turn to the expert.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, on the Sirius satellite beaming down from outer space, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, on cable TV, on cable radio network. Anyhow, here we are with you. Hope you're having a great day. Everybody, you know, one of the more common questions, as it were, that I get is, you know, what's up with John Kerry? You know, what do you think of John Kerry? What's the future of this? All that sort of thing. And so we have on Marco, is it pronounced Tribovich?
Tribovich, yes, it is.
Tribovich, great. Marco Tribovich, who I screwed it up again, didn't I? I'm sorry. Tribovich, who serves as assistant to the president for the United, who serves as assistant to the president for the United Steelworkers of America, and is the director of labor policy for the Kerry administration, the Kerry campaign. This is something that's near and dear to my heart, labor policy. I write about it extensively. I talk about it on this program. I had breakfast day before yesterday with Mark Gaffney, the president of the AFL-CIO in Detroit. You have known John Kerry since you guys served together in the Navy in the 1960s.
That's right.
And yeah, and I think this is just great because I have been telling people in this program, we've been doing this show for about 2 years. We're going on our second year. And a lot of Greens have called in, and I will confess that in 2000 I actually voted for Ralph Nader. And, you know, they call in and they say, you know, well, you know, it's the Democrats, it's the Democratic Leadership Council, you know, Republican light, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. And I say, hey, the founders, in a way, blew it. I mean, when we started the United States of America, we thought that, this was perfect democracy. And it wasn't until 1861 that John Stuart Mill invented proportional representation. We don't have national instant runoff voting, and we don't have proportional representation. So we really do have a two-party system, and we're just stuck with that. Us, Greece, Canada, to some extent, and Australia. And of course, Australia has solved the problem with IRV. And so what I have been recommending is that progressives across the nation, and we'll find out here in our conversation where you're at on this, because I may be well to the left of you, whatever that means.
Most people aren't.
Yeah, they're okay. The progressives in this country, my advice to them, I wrote a piece for Common Dreams. I write, you know, every couple weeks they publish one of my pieces. I wrote a piece for them saying, you know, we need to infiltrate and take over the Democratic Party the way the conservatives did the Republican Party in the early 1970s, late 60s after Goldwater went down in flames. And give it back its heart and soul. And I play clips here from speeches from Franklin Roosevelt all the time. And so anyhow, let's talk about labor policy. This is the topic. We're talking with Marko Tribovic, who is the assistant to the president for the United Steelworkers of America, but also, and most importantly for this discussion, the director of labor policy for the Kerry campaign. Our number, by the way, if you'd like to call in and toss in your 2 cents, is 1-866-889-8894. And I've got some notes here, and I'm not sure if Louise wrote these up or if these came from you, if these are, you know, like the talking points, as it were. Well, first of all, I think this, because it's a question probably...
Can I just address something, because you brought it up about the Greens? First of all, I have a high regard for Ralph Nader and what he's done to help establish a progressive agenda in this country.
Yeah.
But... well-informed Greens, I presume, know that it would be tougher to get more formidable advocacy than they got out of John Kerry, who earlier this year said he would filibuster on the floor of the U.S. Senate to prevent the passage of ANWR.
Yeah.
And played a significant role. So his entire record on the environment, it's a little bit of a mystery to me why Greens would be equivocal at all about voting for John Kerry.
Yeah, although that's ANWR, and you've got actually labor supporting ANWR in some regards. I mean, you know, it's but yeah, I understand it. I agree. I think that I encourage people to continue to participate in the Green Party at the local level, because the Green Party is the one that has gotten instant runoff voting in some 250 communities across the United States now. I mean, they're actually producing change at the local level and doing very well. You know, San Francisco just picked it up, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage them to join the Democratic Party. You know,
mm-hmm.
Do both. Sure. They're not mutually exclusive. So anyhow... John Kerry has said that, you know, of course, Bush is lying about this in his TV ads, but basically John Kerry said he wants to roll back these tax cuts for everybody who earns over $200,000. I'm wondering, is he willing to stand up to corporate? You know, he talked about Benedict Arnold Corporations there. You know, Accenture just got this $20 billion contract, right? They're based, you know, it used to be Anderson Consulting. Inappropriate name after Enron. They changed, you know, they changed it to Accenture, and now they're based in Bermuda. Is Kerry going to continue that? I mean, I understand. And let me just caveat this. I've gone back and read some of the ads, as it were, for the Roosevelt campaign in 1932.
Right, he came out for a balanced budget, didn't he?
Yeah,
28.
And in 28 actually, and you know, and he was sort of anti-war in the early years, going along the Republicans, and you know, he basically, and I think most people don't realize this. Franklin Roosevelt said what he had to say to get elected. Once he got elected, he kicked butt, and there are a lot of us who are wondering, and I realize it might be impolitic for you to say. And I respect that, and I won't push you on it. But do you think that John Kerry has the potential to be a Franklin Roosevelt, to transform the Democratic Party and the United States in a significant way, and bring and revive the American middle class?
Well, I think he's already taken some positions that pretend that possibility. If you look at the reality of what happened with Roosevelt, actually he didn't do the deal in New Deal initially. He did it 2 years later, and he came under enormous pressure, particularly from the CIO,
mm-hmm.
Because he had campaigned on a balanced budget, and it wasn't working.
Yeah,
so
well,
I think
the CIO represented the professional trades as opposed to the blue collar trades, and there was
the CIO represented the industrial trades, the industrial workers, steel workers. The UAW were the heart and soul of the CIO. So,
I see.
It was
okay.
The blue collar workers.
Pardon me.
Who were pressing the issue in 1934.
But be that as it may,
I think what you're going to be looking at, this administration has made such a mess out of circumstance that it's going to take leadership that provides a considerable amount of activism at the federal level to change the dynamics that are causing. Today, we just learned today that real wages have actually been driven down in May by a considerable increase in the rate of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that's going to radically redistribute income in this country more than inflation. So we're facing circumstances where, as Emerson once said, events are in the saddle and ride mankind. Number two, I think Kerry has shown a great deal of inclination toward an activist presidency by steps he's already taken. He is called in March for a new jobs tax credit in manufacturing. We have the worst manufacturing crisis we've had in this country in 80 years. We have a fundamental decision to be made to make, and it would appear that the Bush administration has already made it.
Yeah.
Are we going to be a country that just services and packages and distributes what people in other parts of the world produce? Or are we going to persist as a highly productive producer of goods and value-added products?
Well, first of all, what's wrong with producing?
The way things are going, the latter is not going to happen. It has to change.
What's wrong with producing what the rest of the world produces and selling it to ourselves?
Because what's happening in this transition is, if you look at people who've lost their jobs in the industrial and manufacturing sector and gone to work in the service sector, they earn $9,000 less a year.
Right, that's my point. I mean, my point is, why don't we go back? Why don't we? You know, I'm in favor of repealing Taft-Hartley, going back to Smoot-Hawley type legislation. Let's keep American jobs in America. I mean, you know,
I don't know that you have to go all the way to. I'm all for repealing Taft-Hartley, but I don't know about Smoot-Hawley. I mean, I think that's another issue. If you take a look at the tariff issue, when you had enormous surges in the steel industry, you had more than 40 companies go bankrupt. You had 17 companies liquidated. You had 240,000. You still have to this day 240,000 retirees and surviving spouses who've lost their health care benefits because of those collapses.
But that wasn't Smoot-Hawley. That was the Great Depression.
Principle, Tom, that the failure of a company should not cause you to lose your health care benefits in this country.
Well, I agree, but I would say that wasn't Smoot-Hawley. That was the Great Depression. I mean, Smoot-Hawley, for those who don't know, in 1930, Hoover passed Smoot-Hawley, and it raised tariffs from 26% to 50%, depending on the items, and the U.S. Lost from 30% to 32%, roughly, between 6% and 2% of GNP as a result of Smoot-Hawley. So it really only had about a 4% impact on the total collapse of domestic spending. And at the same time, what it did was it increased the number of jobs in the United States because things were being manufactured here because we weren't buying them from overseas. I mean, people say, well, we were hurting Europe, but we really started hurting Europe in the roaring 20s when people stopped investing in Europe. I mean, there was a massive disinvestment. In 1928, investments in Europe fell 78%. Loans to Germany went from 227 to 30 million between 28 and 29. This had nothing to do with Smoot-Hawley.
Well, if your question is will Kerry challenge the practices of corporations that are causing jobs to be outsourced, the answer is not only will he already has.
But see, my argument is
he's called for the let's listen to what he's done, Tom.
Sure.
He's already called for the elimination of the corporate tax deferral for overseas jobs, and so the basic principle here is that if companies are going to send jobs overseas as a basic principle, they should not be allowed to use your tax dollars to do it. And that's a fundamental difference from where we've been in the past several years. And that's, I would argue, that's a fairly progressive point of view.
I don't disagree, but I still think we're dealing with symptoms, not cause. I mean, the game of
business. What do you think the cause is?
I think the cause, frankly, is that the game of business is no different than the game of soccer, that you have specific rules by which you play, that the game of business in the United States, up until the chartermongering era of the 1890s, you know, when John Rockefeller started pitting states against each other after Ohio threw him out and Delaware ended up winning the race, every state in the Union had as a requirement for any corporation incorporated in that state that its first purpose had to be to serve the public good. And 2,000 corporations were shut down between 1780 and 1875 because they failed to do that. I really think that we need to be looking at structural things, the structural problem. I have no problem with a corporation going overseas and hiring Chinese labor because they're playing the game by the rules that we the people have set. But we the people aren't running the show.
I just talked about a rule that Kerry wanted to change, Tom.
Yeah, well, I agree. I'm not trying to argue here with you.
Why is that not a structural change?
Well, because
it's a fundamental change to tax policy that says your tax dollars will not again be used to encourage this.
I agree. I just don't think tax policy is enough. But we got to take a break here. We'll be right back. Okay. This is the Tom Hartman program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Why me, George? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the plagues that you've sown? Tell me, George, what did I ever do for a whiz kid like you to bring chaos to my home?
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Marco Tribovich, who is the Director of Labor Policy for the Kerry campaign. As we were coming into the last break, we have hard breaks on this show, and I just, you know, they come up, and I have no control over it. And, you know, I said I have no problem with a company that goes to China because the labor's cheaper there. The reason, of course, I was saying that was because they're simply playing the game by the rules, and those didn't used to be the rules in the United States. We used to have tariffs. This was before WTO and GATT and NAFTA. We used to have tax policies that encouraged people staying here. How does John Kerry, and these were structural things. I mean, the reality is that the middle class is an artificial thing. It's a creation of government. In you look at at least 1,000 years of European history, but I mean, you can go all the way back to Mesopotamia, and the middle class just never really existed until government got involved. And whether it was the Wagner Act or whether it was giving away free land in the 1700s and early 1800s. And what are the things that John Kerry will do structurally? Well,
I think there's three major things. Let's just talk about eliminating the incentives for companies now currently under the rules to take jobs abroad, increasing the incentives for companies to create jobs here at home, and then, perhaps most importantly, to lift the enormous burden of skyrocketing health care costs off the American people and even off businesses who are experiencing it and in turn demanding or asking of their employees that they pay higher premiums and co-pays or reduce their benefits. With regard to the outsourcing, he's called for the elimination of what's called the deferral. Companies can now, operating internationally, can defer their taxes year over year. Kerry has called for an end to that and the elimination of what is essentially a taxpayers in the United States subsidizing these companies to make profits overseas and pay no taxes on it.
Yeah.
Secondly, he's called for a new jobs tax credit in manufacturing and in other businesses that are affected by outsourcing, and that new jobs tax credit would lift the cost of the payroll tax for the first 2 years for those companies for all new hires. So those are significant steps that change the direction in which we're going now. It eliminates the incentives for companies to move work abroad. It increases the incentives for them to increase the value-added jobs and the good-paying jobs in manufacturing. There are a number of things also that the government has been very active in and that have been very, very successful. One of them is called the Manufacturing Extension Partnership. It's a program that helps small manufacturers, and there are 350 small manufacturers in this country, and they create half the value of America's industrial production, and they employ more than 11 million people.
Mm-hmm.
This administration, the Bush administration, which is allegedly a pro-business administration, is actually, because it's a federal program, a program of federal activism, it went in and wiped out 90% of the funding for this Manufacturing Extension Partnership. So the ability of businesses to learn more about new technologies, about export techniques, and to get the support to do that was virtually eliminated. In addition, this administration tried to entirely wipe out the advanced technology program of the federal government. What you have in this administration that is fundamentally where Kerry is fundamentally different from where we are now, you basically have an administration that's trying to pretend to come up the middle when in fact they're putting in place policies, making cuts in both taxes and programs that will create the government of Grover Norquist's liking, which is Grover Norquist, I'm sure as your listeners know, is a radical right-winger who meets regularly with the political leadership.
Oh, he wants to take us back to the Gilded Age.
He's literally said he wants to shrink the federal government to the size where it can be drowned in a bathroom.
Drowned in the bathroom, right. We're talking with Marco Tribovich. Marco, we've got to take another very quick break here. I know you can only be with us till 20 minutes, but we'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new report from Human Rights Watch accuses the Coca-Cola Company of profiting off child labor in El Salvador. The report details the widespread use of children in the sugarcane fields of that country. Up to 30,000 kids as young as 8 are involved in the backbreaking work of planting and harvesting, for which they are paid little and receive no medical care when injured. Coke drinks are made from the sugar processed from the cane, but the company does not own or deal directly with the plantations. Human Rights Watch hopes the company will use its power and influence to force Salvadoran cane farmers to comply with labor law, which in El Salvador sets the minimum working age at 14.
After contract negotiations fell through, more than 1,500 members of the United Auto Workers Local 997 walked off the job on Thursday at two local Maytag plants in Newton, Iowa. Maytag's corporate headquarters is based in Newton and employs 10% of the city's residents, now out of work due to the strike. At issue is healthcare retirement benefits and Maytag's proposal to continue massive layoffs. Downsizing hundreds of salaried employees is part of a national corporate restructuring program, in addition to the 1,300 people laid off in the past year and a half. Maytag announced that it knew the work stoppage was coming and built up a surplus inventory. Local president Pat Tweed speaking from the picket line at the plant gate.
Maytag and UAW were a valuable part of this community, and you know, we're a majority of what this community is about as far as the commerce and people spending money and buying houses, cars.
Workers are hoping for a speedy resolution, unlike the last major strike at the Newton plant in 1971 that lasted for 5 months.
Victory for banana workers in Colombia. A two-week strike of 16,000 at plantations there ended yesterday when the growers agreed to allow farm workers to remain employees. They'd gone on strike to protest a proposal that would have classified them as seasonal workers and made them more susceptible to hiring and firing at the whim of a plantation owner. Banana planters and pickers will also receive wage increases, including adjustments for inflation. This staves off a potential shortage, as Colombia is the third largest exporter of bananas in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report by the U.S. Department of Labor suggests that more jobs are lost due to domestic competition than to workers overseas. According to the Labor Department, of the 200,000-plus jobs lost in the first quarter of 2004, only about 4,600, or 2%, were due to offshore outsourcing. But the report didn't include small-scale layoffs in its numbers and relied on management to accurately self-report their figures.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program here. We're talking with Marco Tribovich, who is the Director of Labor Policy for the Kerry campaign. He's known John Kerry since they served together in the Navy back in the 1960s. John, you were just describing the things that John Kerry would do that would essentially discourage companies, multinational corporations in particular, I think, based in the U.S., many of them, from moving jobs and manufacturing overseas, bringing a lot of it back home. Aren't these the kind of things that kind of fly in the face of Bill Clinton's New Democrats, Tony Blair's New Labor, the Democratic Leadership Council? And are you guys getting flack from these folks for this?
No, I think the Democratic Party is very united in seeing the need for change. And even if you look at the Clinton administration, the trade agreement that Clinton signed with Jordan at the end of his 8 years was quite different than some approaches he had taken to trade before. You know, circumstances are changing. People are addressing those. By the way, when we left, we were talking about, you know, fundamental differences which reflect a willingness to use the power of the federal government to the advantage of the entire society.
Right.
A great example of that is the Bush administration's deliberate refusal in the so-called Medicare prescription drug program, which is a completely fraudulent program.
Mm.
It explicitly prevents the federal government from negotiating for purchase of drugs in mass form, which is exactly, for instance, what the Canadian government does. Kerry would directly reverse this under his health care plan. He would allow the federal government to negotiate this because in the absence of that, you have no power to challenge the skyrocketing prices. The other thing that his plan does is it creates a premium rebate pool. The biggest problem that employers are confronting and employees as well is that the great burden of health care costs is incurred late in people's working careers. And so through catastrophic care.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the Kerry plan would do through the use of this premium rebate pool would be to reimburse employers' health care plans for 75% of their costs above $50,000 as long as those savings are used to reduce the cost of workers' premiums.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a very active role here of federal leadership in lifting the most burdensome cost that's driving up the cost of health care in combination with prescription drugs. So in both the cost of prescription drugs and on the issue of making health care affordable, the third leg of that, as you know, Tom, is Kerry has called for the elimination of the tax cuts for those who are earning more than $200,000 a year, and he devotes those savings to the health care plan which he has proposed. So this is a very activist form of leadership.
Yeah, this is a real reversal of the last 20 years. I mean, Reagan's famous saying, the problem is, government is the problem. I forget the exact quote. I heard it just the other day. Really is backwards. Absolutely unrestrained business, particularly unrestrained to the point that they can come in and take over government, control
government.
Well,
the most egregious example of unrestrained corporate behavior is an administration which says that the American public has no right to know what went on in secret meetings with a corporation, Enron, in the White House that was involved in a conspiracy to defraud the state of California and to jack up energy prices, electricity prices in this country. I mean, that's just, it's appalling.
Yeah.
That they would suggest that the public has no right to even know what goes on in those meetings.
Yeah. Now, I know you have to leave here in just a few minutes, but just two more quick questions.
Sure.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson, when he started the University of Virginia, wrote a lot of very eloquent letters to a number of friends of his about his belief that if democracy was to survive in America, that higher education must be available to everybody at no cost. In other words, everybody who was able to succeed in a university should be available. And, of course, the University of Virginia was free back then. I know John Kerry has a position on this. You want to tell us about this?
Yeah. Let me just preface that by saying, you know, the Bush administration has put everybody in a terrible trap through their reckless expenditures both abroad and their reckless tax cuts here at home. I mean, it's incredible that someone would cut taxes like this and engage in a war that costs hundreds of billions of dollars at the same time. But that being the case, You can't move quickly to a fully paid education, but Kerry has proposed a tax credit of $4,000 per year that can be used for college educations. We just need to really lift up the level of education across this society if we're going to lift up people's capacities to earn and to have a growing economy yeah. in the world of marketplace we're in.
And finally, the question that gets most asked of me, you know, callers, people who are calling into this program, the comment that they make, is, you know, I've had a number of people, in fact, who've called and they've said they've seen John Kerry in public, you know, in person. Mm-hmm. And he does a great job. He can charge up a crowd and he gives a mm-hmm. good speech. And, you know, the one guy shook his hand and was very impressed, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But the perception, and I don't know if this is media manufactured. I don't know if this is coming out of the right-wing talk machine. I suspect a lot of it does. Or if it's that there is some truth to it, that, you know, he just grew up in New England. Here I am broadcasting from Vermont, where people are just a little more reserved. Although, you know, I took you on here in the first. I'm used to debating right wingers on this program. I prefer to get right wingers on, and I just take them apart. And I'm sorry. I started out in pitbull mode with you.
A little lively discourse is a good thing.
There you go. But people say John Kerry just doesn't connect through the television or through the radio or in his commercials with the average person. You know, what do you think about that? What's being done about that?
I don't know that there's anything to do about that, because you have to accept that that's true in the first place. In the place he has had the most exposure to voters, and where there is the most intimate exposure to voters in the course of the campaign season, is in Iowa. And he ended up running away with it in a multi-candidate race. So I don't know where that opinion comes from. It's not an opinion that's validated by what happened in the primary process, nor is it validated by the voters of Iowa in particular, who had an up-close and personal look at Kerry over a prolonged period of time.
Yeah.
I don't know where that comes. I mean, John Kerry inspired millions of people in this country when he came back from a very distinguished service in Vietnam, and having seen what he saw about how this country is being misled.
That's the thing. I think a lot of people saw that testimony before Congress where he said, you know, who wants to be the last man to die for a mistake? And they saw the fire and the passion there. And maybe it's, you know, selective choice of news. Although I have, you know, I've heard on CNN, on MSNBC, mm-hmm. I don't watch Fox News out of principle, but and on the major networks, you know, these comments about Kerry doesn't seem to be firing up people. And there was that fire in his belly when he came back from Vietnam. And it sounds to me like you're saying it's still there. We just have to figure out a way to make sure that Americans know about it.
Well, it's the fact of the matter is that millions of Americans yet haven't even gotten to know John Kerry in the way that Iowans did.
That's true.
It's June.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're engaged full-blown in an election in June that normally doesn't get going in this fashion until after July or August, so that there are millions of Americans who haven't. Normally, you know, in the cycle, people really become most familiar with these candidates at the party conventions. We're several months campaigning before we even get to that point because of the early end to the primary process. So I am confident that people will become excited by the process, the possibility, not only by John Kerry, but the possibility of a new direction
in which
we have federal leadership that cares about the society as a whole rather than the privileged few.
Yeah, and I have to say, I love these optimistic, positive ads that he's running. I think it is such a good strategy to, you know, let Bush, although I'm surprised he hasn't answered some of Bush's lies, but you know, to let Bush go out and, you know, wah, rah, 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 and then Kerry comes out and says, hey, I'm an optimist. You know, we can, you know, it's a, you know, sort of a variation on what Reagan used, but it's true. I mean, I think it's wonderful. Marco, I know you have to go, so I'll let you go.
Thank you very much for having us on, I appreciate the opportunity to answer your question.
I am very pleased you were here. Marco Tribovich, who is the assistant to the president for the United Steelworkers of America and is the director of labor policy for the Kerry campaign. Marco, thanks again.
Thanks to you, Tom.
Okay. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Moving right along. I do want to get into some of these issues and some of the areas where. I'm almost reluctant to segue off a discussion with a John Kerry guy about it because I just don't As I mentioned earlier, you know, Roosevelt ran this kind of milquetoast campaign. I don't mean any of this as a repudiation or a criticism of Kerry, but I just want to lay out what I think should be, you know, if I was running for president. Okay, and I realize I'm not. I'm running for talk show host. And the way you vote for me, if you like me, is you call up my sponsors and say, hey, I'm listening to the show and I love the I love it and I'm going to buy your products, or call the radio stations and let them know. And you know, it's pretty straightforward. And if you don't, you change the dial, and that's everybody's right. But in a political campaign, if I was running Taft-Hartley, we talked about repealing Taft-Hartley, and Marco said, I believe he said that he was in favor of that, although he wasn't speaking on behalf of John Kerry. Taft-Hartley was passed in 1947 over the objection, over the veto of Harry Truman. And it banned the practice of one union going on strike in support of another union. It banned the practice. I mean, now unions won't cross picket lines, as is happening in Boston, but that's a different thing. And it allowed states to make an up and down yes or no decision about whether or not they wanted to have either what are called open or closed shops. A closed shop is where everybody who works for the company, if the majority of the members of the company decide that they're going to be unionized, then everybody who works for that company has to be a member of the union. There are always people, and the reason why the Wagner Act of 1935 specified this, and that the union supported this, and continue to this day, was because everybody who works there is benefiting from the presence of the union. Union wages have helped define the middle class in the United States. They've built up the middle class in the United States. Until the advent of this Walmart phenomena, which is now defining the bottom end of the wage scale in America and wiping out the middle class in America. It was union jobs that defined the top end of the pay scale, you know, where everybody wanted to be, and companies had to compete with that, and they did, and they paid good wages because, hey, you know, if somebody didn't like the job, they could go get a job at Oldsmobile and, you know, be in the union and get good benefits. And so companies offered benefits, companies offered, you know, good pay and those kind of things. But Taft-Hartley gave states the ability to have what are called open shops, where you can be a member of a unionized company, but you don't have to join the union, which really was a way of sabotaging the unions. Sure, we're going to let you, you know, be in this company. We're going to let you bargain on behalf of the employees, blah, 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 blah. But we're going to cut off your resources. In other words, they didn't have to pay dues to the unions. And of course, a lot of guys would say, a lot of people working in a shop would say, "Well, you know, I'd just as soon keep the money." I mean, it's easy to understand. It's a sort of a variation on Sean Hannity's lie about taxes, you know, where he says it's your money, you ought to keep it, you know, completely ignoring the whole concept of a social contract in the United States. But I think this should be at the top of the list: repealing the Taft-Hartley Act. And I think that, you know, rather, you know, tax credits to create manufacturing jobs, great. I think that's wonderful. Bush hasn't done anything to end incentives that encourage companies to go offshore. If anything, his Labor Department, Elaine Chao, the wife of, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the senator, Elaine Chao, the rabid right-winger, anti-labor, labor-hater, who has the Labor Department, which is supposed to be, and you know, up until Reagan came into office, defended the interests of labor. I mean, here's the idea. You've got in the government, you've got the Commerce Department that's out there promoting the interests of corporations. I mean, here we had Dick Cheney going to... I mean, here we had Dick Cheney going to China just a few months ago to sell billions of dollars worth of military goods to them, ironically enough. And then you had the Labor Department that represented the interests of labor. Well, no more. We still have the Labor Department, but now they seem to be devoted 100% to screwing labor, which is, you know, you and me. hello, you know, those of us who are not the multimillionaires of America, those of us who work for a living or who own small businesses. And frankly, I put them all in that category. And I think that tariffs are the solution. Was Herbert Hoover throughout the 20s, Hoover and the other conservative administrations that preceded him, whether you call them Democrat or Republican, the only progressive who ran from the Gilded Age to 1930s was Teddy Roosevelt in his third attempt, after he'd been president as a Republican, and did some good things. You know, gave us national parks and lots of other good things. But he had Teddy Roosevelt had an awakening. He had a profound awakening. And he decided to split away from the Republican Party and run as a third-party candidate. And, of course, he, you know, it's the same mistake Ralph Nader is making. But in any case, Teddy Roosevelt got it that the problem was conservative economics. And here again we have, you know, this Smoot-Hawley. Let me explain it just real quickly after the break, so that you can argue this thing, the water cooler wars you will be able to win, because this is an interesting one. 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation, free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
We're at a dangerous tipping point on the global environment, according to a veteran environmental analyst. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. In 1977, President Jimmy Carter ordered a government report on global and environmental trends. Gus Speth served on the committee that took up the task.
We started out almost 25 years ago identifying this agenda of global scale concerns. Problems like climate disruption, loss of ocean fisheries, deforestation in the tropics, water shortages. We put it on the agenda almost 25 years ago, and it's been a huge response.
Speth says the response is seen in a number of treaties and advances in environmental science, but he says we've made practical progress on only one major environmental problem, the destruction of the ozone layer. Just about everything else continues to worsen. Ocean fisheries are at or beyond capacity. We're losing an acre of tropical forest every second, and species extinctions are at an all-time high. Speth has written a new book called Red Sky at Morning. It warns that our actions to address these environmental crises have been insufficient, and we're running out of time.
Over the next 20, 25 years, we're going to see an appalling environmental deterioration, much worse than anything we've seen so far, if we don't respond truly aggressively and urgently to these issues and take a different approach from the one that we've taken so far.
Speth says population growth and our consumption of resources are overwhelming the Earth. He says it's not too late to turn things around, but we can't wait any longer.
The scale of human activity on this planet is so enormous and growing so fast that the future losses will be more serious than the past. We're kind of in a race to the finish here. Whatever slack nature cut us is gone.
That's Gus Speth, author of Red Sky at Morning. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I was riding the subway with 1,000 New Yorkers headed downtown. An old woman shoved over, she made room for me to sit down. A young Hispanic couple cuddled in the corner.
And welcome back. It's Tommy. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
The old woman smiled at them. She leaned over to me and whispered, ain't love grand.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
Ain't love grand.
Ain't love grand.
Though it's never
4 minutes before the hour. As you heard, you know, as you got it from our last guest, even Democrats, you say Smoot-Hawley and they all just like, ah! You know, it's like make the symbol of the cross or something, pull out the garlic and put it around their necks. But here's what happened. Here's what Smoot-Hawley was. And keep in mind, this was done by Hoover, a Republican. The great crash happened in 1929, October 1929, and it echoed all around the world. And businesses were going out of business like crazy. People were thrown out of work. It wasn't, you know, I mean, the depths of the Great Depression was 1932, 1933, but this was bad. This was worse than anything that we've seen recently here. And what Smoot-Hawley did was they said this, what the Smoot-Hawley law said, and it was passed and it was signed by Hoover. And it was an attempt to prevent the Great Depression from getting worse, from the stock market crash turning into the Great Depression. And what they did was they said, okay, the average tax on goods made overseas that's brought into the United States right now is 26%. That was the case in 1930. Now, first of all, Smoot-Hawley was passed after the crash and during the Depression, so it didn't cause the Great Depression, number one. Number two, what Smoot-Hawley said was, let's raise that from 26 to 50%. Now, the effect of that was to dramatically reduce the imports into the United States of foreign-made goods, which created jobs in the United States because we still needed a lot of stuff. Now, there were some things that just didn't make sense on. I mean, we weren't making caviar here, for those who were into caviar. It's probably not the best example. Sandalwood, you know, perfume or whatever. But, you know, it was a blunderbuss. It was a shotgun. I think we need to be doing the same thing now, only strategically. We need to look at those industries where we say, you know, first of all, the strategic industries, the defense industries, we can't build a missile now without parts from China. That's wrong. Then we need to be looking at the industries where, why don't we be self-sufficient? Why can't we make our own clothing in the United States? Why can't we make our own computers in the United States? And we need to impose tariffs, taxes, that are high enough that companies simply won't buy them from overseas. And yeah, it'll cause a trade war, and other companies will start, countries will stop buying our stuff. But the net result, I think, is going to be the best thing for the United States. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new report from Human Rights Watch accuses the Coca-Cola Company of profiting off child labor in El Salvador. The report details the widespread use of children in the sugarcane fields of that country. Up to 30,000 kids as young as 8 are involved in the backbreaking work of planting and harvesting, for which they are paid little and receive no medical care when injured. Coke drinks are made from the sugar processed from the cane, but the company does not own or deal directly with the plantations. Human Rights Watch hopes the company will use its power and influence to force Salvadoran cane farmers to comply with labor law, which in El Salvador sets the minimum working age at 14.
After contract negotiations fell through, more than 1,500 members of the United Auto Workers Local 997 walked off the job on Thursday at two local Maytag plants in Newton, Iowa. Maytag's corporate headquarters is based in Newton and employs 10% of the city's residents, now out of work due to the strike. At issue is healthcare retirement benefits and Maytag's proposal to continue massive layoffs. Downsizing hundreds of salaried employees is part of a national corporate restructuring program, in addition to the 1,300 people laid off in the past year and a half. Maytag announced that it knew the work stoppage was coming and built up a surplus inventory. Local president Pat Tweed speaking from the picket line at the plant gate.
Maytag and UAW were a valuable part of this community, and, you know, we're a majority of what this community is about as far as the commerce and people spending money and buying houses, cars.
Workers are hoping for a speedy resolution, unlike the last major strike at the Newton plant in 1971 that lasted for 5 months.
Victory for banana workers in Colombia. A two-week strike of 16,000 at plantations there ended yesterday when the growers agreed to allow farm workers to remain employees. They'd gone on strike to protest a proposal that would have classified them as seasonal workers and made them more susceptible to hiring and firing at the whim of a plantation owner. Banana planters and pickers will also receive wage increases, including adjustments for inflation. This staves off a potential shortage, as Colombia is the third largest exporter of bananas in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report by the U.S. Department of Labor suggests that more jobs are lost due to domestic competition than to workers overseas. According to the Labor Department, of the 200,000-plus jobs lost in the first quarter of 2004, only about 4,600, or 2%, were due to offshore outsourcing. But the report didn't include small-scale layoffs in its numbers and relied on management to accurately self-report their figures.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The big money corruption of American politics will be on display at the national conventions of the Republican and Democratic parties this summer. But you can't see it without a ticket. A very pricey ticket. While both parties will portray themselves as heroic leaders for us common folk, and while the media establishment and its pundits will stay focused on their predictable speeches, politicking, and pageantry inside the hall, the real story will be taking place at high-dollar, invitation-only events inside exclusive clubs, restaurants, and other hideaways of the elite. It's in these places, behind the velvet ropes that screen out all of us common folk, that you can see political and money power ooze, schmooze, and merge into one. For example, maybe you've wondered why the banking laws of our great democracy are written in such a way that allow bankers to rob you and me. Such daylight robberies as their endless and always rising fees, so-called privacy provisions that let them sell our personal financial information, etc., etc. It will all come clear to you if you go to the Swank Rainbow Room in Manhattan on the night of August 30th, the opening day of the Republican National Convention. There you'll see Representative Michael Oxley, chairman of the Financial Services Committee that supposedly oversees the banking industry. He'll be the guest of honor at a party paid for by J.P. Morgan Chase, Credit Suisse First Boston, and the other big banks that profit enormously from Chairman Oxley's willingness to legalize their robbery, banks that currently have bills before him to allow even more robbery. The banks are paying up to $100,000 each in tribute to the guy who writes the banking laws. This is Jim Hightower saying, why won't even one network break away from the convention hall to cover this telling political event? Like at the Academy Awards, they could call out the names of the politicians and banking moguls as they pull up at the Rainbow Room in their limousines. Now that would be good TV.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. From Kerry to Bush, last hour we had on, and no, I don't have a Bush advisor. We're going to have to try and get one. Wouldn't that be a hoot to get a Bush advisor on? We are having so much trouble getting right-wingers to come on this press. They are scared to death. Oh, they'll go on Fox News in a heartbeat, or the major news networks when they know that there's just going to be softballs thrown at them. But the Heritage Foundation has stopped sending us people. Anyway, occasionally Ayn Rand does. We get him on here. But where I want to go with this, speaking of Bush, is the 50 reasons to not vote, or rather, not to vote for Bush. Now, you know, hopefully you got it in the last hour. There are some good reasons to vote for John Kerry. And again, I want to make it clear that I think the stakes are really high in this election, and I will do everything I can, which basically is just, you know, the raps that you hear every day here to encourage people to vote for John Kerry, even if they're Greens, even if, like me, in 2000 they voted for Ralph Nader.
And at the same time, to participate in the Democratic Party and infiltrate it and take it back. I think that we absolutely must do that. We absolutely must do that because we're stuck with this two-party system, whether we like it or not. It's what the founders came up with. We're only one of five countries in the world that has it. But here we are. And so you can vote for somebody, you can vote against somebody, but you should vote. And so Robert Sterling has written a book. He's with contributions from Paul Krasner, Greg Palast, Linda Lunch, Sam Smith, Matt Taibbi, Robbie Connell, and Brian Paisley, titled 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush. Robert Sterling, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I assume you're there. Oh, got to push the button. There you go. Hey, Robert.
It's great to be here, and you're one of the sources for the 50 reasons.
I am. Okay, what's that?
The chapter about electronic voting theft.
Oh, cool. Did you credit me?
Of course I did.
Multiple times in it. I'll have to look at it. We just got the book yesterday or the day before, so I haven't had a chance to do more than sit through, you know, go through the table of contents and read it. But thank you. Thank you. That's great.
Well, thank you for all your great work.
I think we all have to keep on keeping. Robert, what do you think of the 50 reasons to not vote for Bush here in the few minutes we have? What do you think are really the top reasons?
Well, the number one reason is he stole the 2000 election, and that's why I put that number one.
Yeah, but why does that mean we shouldn't vote for him now? I mean, it's conceivable, and a lot of Republicans are taking the position. Okay, you know, maybe he did steal the election. Maybe his brother did purge all those African American Floridians off the rolls who were legal eligible voters. Maybe the recount would have gone in Gore's favor. Maybe the Supreme Court handed it to him. But nonetheless, he's done a great job in 4 years and deserves to be reelected. So, you know, why would that be reason number one?
Well, before I answer the Republican lie that he's done a great job, I think there's something more primal here, the issue of democracy and justice, basic right to vote. The ascension of Bush is a rejection of the basic constructs of our government. And to get any level of, you know, recovery to going back to what our country really should be about, should be even rejecting him and what he represents.
But instead of throwing out Bush, I mean, he wasn't the criminal. Why don't we impeach Scalia and Rehnquist and Thomas, and why don't we go after James Baker III, who led the thing down in Florida, and Tom DeLay, who's most of the people in those pictures of the, you know, beating on the windows, let us in, you know, stop the democracy, you know, stop hurting democracy, bloody. They were Tom DeLay's Washington D.C. staff people who were, you know, flown down there for the event. Why not go after them?
Well, certainly they deserve to be gone after, and I wouldn't dispute that. But ultimately, it comes from the top. And at the very least, he agreed to it in consent, and I believe he actively supported it. You know, for all my differences with John McCain, he's a very conservative man with a very conservative philosophy. I really have trouble believing a man of integrity of John McCain put in the same position would have taken this country to a constitutional crisis. I think attitude would be, you know, I'd rather elections be won fair and let's have this in the manner which is best for America. I think the whole 2000 election, in a nutshell, shows that from the beginning, the Bush team did not care about the public, that they were interested in more their own well-being, and everything has followed from that.
You make a good point there. You make a
Thank you
that, that that you know I'll agree with you. I think that's an excellent point.
I suspected you were playing devil's advocate there.
Well, no, I mean, of course, I mean that's my job. But also,
right.
Also, I think that my personal opinion is that while Bush probably condoned it and certainly was very pleased with it, that I don't think that he's the main malefactor in stealing the election. I think his brother is. And, you know, that's who we should be going at. But in any case, if you want that to be the first reason, I do agree that John McCain, he would have said, hey, you know, the election's in November, the inauguration's in January, we've got 3 months here. The founders put that in place specifically because, you know, in the event that there have to be recounts and things, and so why don't we just do the recount? Of course, Bush, it wasn't Gore who sued Bush, Although I've actually heard conservative talk radio hosts say that. But it was Bush who sued Gore before the United Nations, or before the Supreme Court. It was Bush v. Gore. Anyhow, a quick question from one of our listeners. Our number is 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to participate. Number 12, taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey,
yeah,
number 12.
I'd say that John McCain has taken our country to a constitutional crisis because that piece of garbage that he co-authored that basically outlaws political speech 60 days before an election is blatantly unconstitutional. I don't need Congress to tell me when I can run a political ad saying George Bush sucks.
Yeah, well,
or,
I don't.
Or John Kerry sucks.
You know, I'm not here. Go ahead. Well, I was going to say I don't disagree with you, and I think that if that part of it is a significant inhibition of free speech, then the Supreme Court will knock it down. I mean, isn't that before the court right now?
It up. I mean, it reminds me of like the same law. I read a couple of justifications for like segregation and slavery from the Supreme Court in years past, and I really hope that the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform, which is basically an abrogation of the First Amendment, goes the same way as segregation and slavery.
Yeah, you mean goes away. Yeah. Okay. Good point. Struck down. I don't disagree. I think that it's I thought it was a step in the right direction, but it's nowhere near close in my mind to what we really need in the United States to have done. Okay, we're talking with Robert Sterling, the author of 50 Reasons not to vote for Bush. Robert, what are some of the other most important reasons not to vote for Bush?
His failure in September 11th is really number two. I have the title 911 He Knew, which is actually based on a New York Post headline in May of 2002. So, you know, if it's good enough for Rupert Murdoch and the New York Post, it's good enough for me.
Bush knew in advance, you mean?
Yeah, he had warnings that something was going to be happening very soon, multiple warnings, and basically did nothing, or certainly didn't do enough to stop the death to 3,000 people.
Well, actually, he did something. I mean, you know, his attorney general stopped flying on commercial planes. He went to Texas for the longest vacation in presidential history, and then when they still hadn't struck, he went and hid out in Florida.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And his brother put the state of Florida on a state of emergency, which had never been done before during a presidential election. I mean, what was that about if they didn't think that something bad was going to happen?
Well, there's some other things, like on July 5th, and this is in the book, before the book by Richard Clark came out and all this stuff I had written about this, he said to the government's top counterterrorism officials, bluntly in the White House meeting, something really spectacular is going to happen here, and it's going to happen soon. You know, that shows that people were pretty up and up on what was going on. Willie Brown was told, I believe, even the week before, and they still haven't subpoenaed him to find out, but on the morning of the night before he received a call to be very careful about flying, he was scheduled to fly to New York.
I've heard that story, too. I'd love to hear him tell it under oath.
Because you just
never know what's a vanishing hitchhiker story and what isn't, you know.
You know, and then also the day before, there was people who, from the Pentagon, who actually canceled their flights.
Yeah.
Do you know about that story?
Yeah, there was supposed to be a meeting in New York of Pentagon officials, and they all decided not to go. Again, it could have been a coincidence. If you were president and you'd received that August 6th memo that said Al-Qaeda or bin Laden determined to strike in the United Nations, and you had gotten all these advance warnings, what would you have done differently than George Bush?
Oh, that's a very good question. And I got to give you some credit for that.
Well, I mean, if you're going to criticize him for it, there should be, you know, what's the alternative?
Well, I think the most important thing would have been to have NORAD not stand down on September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
That may have been a good place to start. Now, yeah. I'm not saying he actually did that, but that's actually one of the reasons of the book.
Yeah.
The NORAD stand down. I'm sure you probably know what I'm referring to.
I do. Yeah. The other thing is that, you know, part of the warnings that he received was that this was going to involve commercial transportation, and they chose not to notify the airlines and not to notify the flying public because they were afraid it would be bad for business.
Yeah, although in the case of John Ashcroft and members of the Pentagon, that silence and the lack of concern was not included.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So,
there's a
hidden
hypocrisy there that one role for the public and one role for them and their cronies.
Right. And then, of course, there's the third thing that Bush could have done, which is what Richard Clark suggested, which is get down, you know, put out the word, put out a memo, not just from, you know, Louis Freeh or whoever was director of the FBI at the time, but, you know, from Ashcroft or from Bush himself to every local FBI office and every chief of police in the United States saying, we have specific threats against the United States. Do you know anything? Because we now know, you know, from Colleen Rowley's testimony up in Wisconsin, Minnesota,
right,
that they did know something. In fact, they knew stuff that could have prevented 9/11. And there was no, what's his name? Clark refers to it as shaking the trees. There was no shaking of the trees. There was no attempt to find out what this terrible thing might be that might happen in the United States using domestic intelligence apparatus. It was just well, you know, something awful is going to happen. Let's stay off commercial airplanes for a while and let's go to Texas.
Exactly correct.
Yeah, so that's your number two. We got about 30 seconds before we got to take a break. Real quick, what's number three?
Number three is Where's Osama? And it's actually the shortest reason in the book. It's one quote: the most important thing is for the U.S. to find Osama bin Laden. It's our number one priority. We will not rest until we find him. That's from September 13, 2001. 6 months later, I don't know where he is. I just don't spend that much time on him, really, to be honest
yeah.
with you. I truly am not that concerned about him.
There you go. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program. Stay tuned.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I read their exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We are talking with Robert Sterling, the author of 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush, a new book out in bookstores near you, and, of course, all the usual suspects online. Robert Sterling, I was interested to note in your book that George Bush signed 18 pieces of anti-abortion legislation while he was governor of Texas. He's in bed with the anti-abortion folks nationally. He's made abortion a litmus test for Supreme Court judges, and yet he knocked up a girlfriend and helped her get an abortion when he was younger.
Yeah. Well, if you call the early 70s for him younger, I mean, he still was certainly a well-developed adult at that point.
He would have been in his 30s then, right? His late
20s? I believe so, yes. Yeah. Actually, he'd been in his 20s.
But, yeah, but this was before Roe v. Wade. This was when abortion was still illegal. And so
yes, exactly.
He arranged for his girlfriend to get an illegal abortion.
Yeah, that's according to Larry Flint. Actually, I've even found the name of the woman, and it's a story that pretty much checks out. And the only reason he hasn't published her name is, and pursued it further, is because she does not want to go forward.
Yeah, but you've double checked, and you know, Larry Flint, for all of his, you know, people criticizing for publishing Hustler, blah blah, he's done some pretty solid reporting actually, and back before he was shot. I had met him actually. I knew him, and he was the back page of Hustler was always these anti-tobacco industry ads, and he had the famous one that he was criticized for of the woman going through the meat grinder on his cover, and
right.
It was really a criticism of his own industry. The guy was he was a pretty stand-up guy. I have a lot of respect for him, I have to say, even though I'm not I haven't seen his magazine in probably 20 years, but anyhow. Okay, so 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Humboldt County has a quick question for you here. Robert Sterling, our guest, the author of 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush, one of them, of course, being that he knocked up a girlfriend, then arranged for her to get an abortion when it was illegal, but then but now has decided, well, you know the rest of the story. Anyhow, Dave, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, thank you so much for hearing this voice of reality right here being aired in the United States of America. Democracy, maybe you are bringing it to us there. Tom.
Doing my best, Dave.
Yeah, and you're doing a commendable job, and this is very refreshing. I'm referring particularly to this truth about 9/11. Why is our media got their head in the sand? They talk about conspiracy theorists, and I am of the belief that, yes, we are the victim of that. It's all in the form of this right-wing talk radio and fundamentalist churches that are programming us to believe that slavery is the best of all possible systems. Do you think Michael Moore is going to help blow the lid off this one?
That's a good question. Robert, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me just say that Reason 40 is the corporate takeover of our media, and I do list that information. I even go into the whole thing about, besides, of course, the obvious Fox News, Clear Channel Communications, how both the top executives of the Clear Channel are, in fact, closely tied business partners to George Bush. In fact, the vice chairman, Tom Hicks,
now, here's,
a multimillionaire.
Yeah, I know. But here's the flip side of that. You are being heard right now, you and me, on Clear Channel stations.
Well, I'm glad that it's happening there. And congratulations to them to have the good economic sense to have someone like you. But, you know, more power to that. On the other hand, just having so many channels, 1,200, in the hand of one single corporation is a very disturbing thing, especially when that corporation is tied to one candidate.
Yeah, it's when the corporations decide to get political that, you know, number one, I'm in favor of enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act and cutting back the size of some of these corporations. But number two, the big problem is when they start to get political. We've been talking with Robert Sterling, his new book, 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush. The invited bookstore is near you. Robert, thank you for being on the program with us today.
It's a pleasure, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It's the 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program helping you win the water cooler wars. We'll be right back. Robert, thank you very much.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new report from Human Rights Watch accuses the Coca-Cola Company of profiting off child labor in El Salvador. The report details the widespread use of children in the sugarcane fields of that country. Up to 30,000 kids as young as 8 are involved in the backbreaking work of planting and harvesting, for which they are paid little and receive no medical care when injured. Coke drinks are made from the sugar processed from the cane, but the company does not own or deal directly with the plantations. Human Rights Watch hopes the company will use its power and influence to force Salvadoran cane farmers to comply with labor law, which in El Salvador sets the minimum working age at 14.
After contract negotiations fell through, more than 1,500 members of the United Auto Workers Local 997 walked off the job on Thursday at two local Maytag plants in Newton, Iowa. Maytag's corporate headquarters is based in Newton and employs 10% of the city's residents, now out of work due to the strike. At issue is healthcare retirement benefits and Maytag's proposal to continue massive layoffs. Downsizing hundreds of salaried employees is part of a national corporate restructuring program, in addition to the 1,300 people laid off in the past year and a half. Maytag announced that it knew the work stoppage was coming and built up a surplus inventory. Local president Pat Tweed speaking from the picket line at the plant gate.
Maytag and UAW were a valuable part of this community, and, you know, we're a majority of what this community is about as far as the commerce and people spending money and buying houses, cars.
Workers are hoping for a speedy resolution, unlike the last major strike at the Newton plant in 1971 that lasted for 5 months.
Victory for banana workers in Colombia. A two-week strike of 16,000 at plantations there ended yesterday when the growers agreed to allow farm workers to remain employees. They'd gone on strike to protest a proposal that would have classified them as seasonal workers and made them more susceptible to hiring and firing at the whim of a plantation owner. Banana planters and pickers will also receive wage increases, including adjustments for inflation. This staves off a potential shortage as Colombia is the third largest exporter of bananas in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report by the U.S. Department of Labor suggests that more jobs are lost due to domestic competition than to workers overseas. According to the Labor Department, of the 200,000-plus jobs lost in the first quarter of 2004, only about 4,600, or 2%, were due to offshore outsourcing. But the report didn't include small-scale layoffs in its numbers and relied on management to accurately self-report their figures.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting events in the Middle East. I'm going to give you an update on that and my take on it. I think we're on the edge of something that George Bush in his wildest dreams didn't imagine. Just absolutely didn't imagine. But first, let's go to the telephones here. Enrique in Santa Fe. Enrique, am I mispronouncing your name? Is it Enrique?
No, that's it.
Or Enrique.
Yeah, Enrique.
Enrique. Yeah. Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. What's up?
Well, I was... is your guest still there? Or?
No, he's gone.
No, he's gone. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing I've been meaning to say for weeks probably now is, you know, because George Bush is a born-again Christian... You know, he has sort of this absolution of all of his past, you know, like, for instance, the abortion issue with his college girlfriend, all of the businesses that have failed and that type of thing.
His insider trading deal with Harkin Stock, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that slate is completely wiped clean. And it seems also that...
But hang on just a second, Enrique.
Sure.
That, in, you know, my take on that, and having at one point in my life actually been real into that, is that that slate is wiped clean as far as God goes. You know, mm-hmm. the great bookkeeper in the sky who's keeping track of everything that you did. And, you know, here, please tear the pages out and burn them. Does that mean that it's wiped clean here on Earth, you know, before paradise?
Well, it seems for George Bush, it's not only wiped clean for the past, but also for the future. I mean, he's not really held accountable for anything because, after all, he's just a man, and he's admitted that he's weak and that he does have failings and that kind of thing. So. You know, I mean, he gets us involved.
But isn't that admirable? I mean, I remember the last press conference where he said, I can't think of anything I've ever done, you know, any mistakes I've made. But you know, his admitting that he was an alcoholic, he's never used the word alcoholic, but his admitting that he had a problem, that he was running around, that he was doing things he shouldn't have done, you know, he's covered up a lot of things. But, you know, his cocaine arrest, for example, was well covered up by his father, although the traces are still there, and it's confirmable. But his DUI conviction, you know, he's the first president of the United States who's ever been convicted of a crime. He's pretty upfront about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. But it just seems like, you know, there's no accountability in the man.
Yeah. Now this is where I have the problem. This is my problem with George W. Bush, and it has nothing to do with born again Christianity. I don't think that and frankly, I don't think this does, because I think that this precedes his conversion at the age of 40 when he joined the Bible study group and you know, decided to join one of the subcults of Christianity, let's call it. And that is that throughout his life, he has never taken responsibility for things. You know, whether it was the Harkin Stock deal, and he blamed it on the bookkeeper first, or they didn't file the forms, you know, his insider trading thing, and then he blamed it on the SEC, and then his daddy got the SEC to stop the investigation, and then he claimed that he'd been cleared, and so the SEC had to write a letter saying, no, we didn't clear him, we just stopped looking into it. And or the situation back when he was at Yale University, when he got into trouble because him and a bunch of his frat boy brothers went down into one of the minority neighborhoods there and trashed a car, and he walks into the courtroom and just walks right up to the judge, you know, no protocol, not being called on or anything, you know, wearing a pair of jeans and loafers with no socks and you know, checkbook in his hand, and says, just tell me how much the GD fine is. I want to pay it and get the H out of here, you know. And I mean that's his use of the F word, which is we hear from virtually everybody in the White House is every third sentence. There's just this general, that there's really kind of two George Bushes. There's the face that's shown to the world that has been carefully crafted by Karl Rove and the Republican strategists, of the nice guy who kind of screwed up as a young man and underwent this conversion and has become now a noble and fine human being, versus what I see, which is somebody who was, born rich, born into a multimillionaire family, didn't live up to the expectations of his father and mother in his young years, was the black sheep of the family, to use his own phrase, and basically always got a free pass because he was the rich guy. He was connected to the guy who was the head of the CIA, who was the president, who was the congressman at various times, and now he's the president. And that there's just, it's not a lack of responsibility that he's pointing to Christianity for. I think it's just in his personality. End of rant. Your thoughts?
Well, I think, you've expressed sort of what I've been thinking about it, but it makes it very difficult for John Kerry to ever run against that type of image, especially with, I guess, the way voters think, that the born-again Christian can do no wrong.
Yeah, well, and here's the problem that Kerry faces. If he goes into a negative ad campaign mode and starts popping the bubbles of the Bush mythology and starts pointing out the warts of the Bush, the Bush reality, that the guy is really mean and vindictive and small and petty and literally keeps an enemies list and remembers slights and holds grudges for decades and that kind of thing. I think that might backfire on Kerry. On the other hand, I'm hopeful that this thing with Valerie Plame, if it turns out that it was Bush who said burn her or burn Joe Wilson and, get his wife if that's what it takes, then Americans might get a little glimpse behind the curtain. The little dog might have pulled back the curtain and we can see the guy behind the curtain who's manipulating the great and wonderful Oz. I'm concerned that if Kerry goes negative, Maybe MoveOn.org should do it. Maybe one of the surrogate groups should do it. Or here on this program we can do it. You and I can do it, Enrique.
All right.
There you go. Okay, well, thanks for the call. I think, you raise a good point, and I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. 20 minutes before the hour, 19 minutes before the hour now, as time marches on. Here's the three things to think about with regard to Iran. Iran, this just in from Reuters now, brand new. Iran has said that if France, Germany, and Britain don't shape up with regard to their participation on the UN Security Council and the UN's investigation of Iran's nuclear program, that Iran is going to do something. They don't specify what it may be. Odds are it would be what the North Koreans did, which is they just simply pull out of the non-proliferation treaties. And Iran is very clear about what is causing this. Iranian President Mohammad Khatami accused Europe's three big powers of working with Tehran's arch foe, Washington, to pile pressure on the Islamic Republic. He said continuation of this behavior under the pressure of America will seriously harm mutual trust and Iran's cooperation with the international community on Iran's use of peaceful nuclear technology. Continued unfriendly behavior and ignorance of undertakings will push Iran to consider its different options. Okay, so we got that. Now the Mooney UPI feeds a story to the Mooney Washington Times, and therefore both are, in my mind, immediately suspect. Because Reverend Moon, of course, having declared himself the Messiah and all this stuff now, who knows? He may just be sitting there going, "Yes, let's have an Armageddon," and then he can step forward and say that he's Jesus Christ, he's here, he's going to save everybody, which he's pretty much already said. But anyhow, this from the Washington Times via the UPI. Iran is reportedly readying troops to move into Iraq if U.S. troops pull out, leaving a security vacuum. The Saudi daily Al-Sharaq Al-Awsat, monitored in Beirut, reports Iran has massed four battalions at the border. They quoted reliable sources as saying, quote, Iran moved part of its regular military forces toward the Iraqi border in the southern sector at a time its military intelligence agents were operating inside Iraqi territory. So, number one, you got Iran saying, we're tired of the United States messing with us. We might do something. Number two, they've got four battalions now massed, according to one source, the UPI and Washington Times, massed on the Iranian border. And now the really interesting stuff comes out, and this is in the Washington Post. And I think this is a pretty solid story. Robin Wright wrote it, and Robin Wright is a reporter whose credentials are not as easily challenged as those, you know, like Tony Blankley, who you know, work as a Mooney or work for the Moonies. And this article points out, this is called U.S. Wary as Iran Works to Increase Influence in Iraq. And with the occupation of Iraq due to end in 3 weeks, the Bush administration fears that Iran will move in as a major player after months of quietly building networks among Iraqi politicians and religious circles. And basically, you know, what this article says is that Iran has been supporting Ayatollah Sistani, who is the head Shiite. Keep in mind, the Shiites are 60% of the Iranian population. Sistani is Iranian. He came from Iran to Iraq after we threw out Saddam. And he's now the head religious guy in the largest religious institution. And according to this article, Iran has been cozying up to him, trying to deepen their ties with the Shiite communities. They're also trying to make buddies with the Kurds, who are on the northern border of Iraq and share a border with Iran, in part. They're providing various types of assistance, not only to Sistani, but Muqtada al-Sadr and Ahmed Chalabi, whose nephew, by the way, was in the news this morning. I don't remember the details. I heard it as I was waking up on NPR, and it was. But he's still there. Chalabi might be gone, but his family, friends. Chalabi's not gone either. Tehran is also cultivating ties or providing material assistance to tribes, militias, interest groups, local notables, political parties, often secular rather than religious, in order to expand its influence, to enhance its influence, says Robin Wright in the Washington Post. Iran has also become a rival to the United States in reconstruction, particularly in Shiite-dominated southern Iraq. You get this? Halliburton's biggest competitor is Iran? Washington believes that Tehran wants the United States to fail in Iraq for fear that the world's only superpower will gain even greater sway in shaping the region's future and feel empowered to launch military action against Iran next. Keep in mind, Afghanistan's on one side of Iran, Iraq's on the other. I mean, you know, think, you know, here we are in the United States. Just imagine that France invaded Canada and then invaded Mexico and then called us the Great Satan. Might we have reason to be worried? Called us part of an axis of evil. Let's use our terms correctly here. U.S. officials said Iran, which is predominantly Shiite, has been linked to attacks at the U.S.-led coalition. The Iranians are very sensitive about being exposed. Now what about being exposed for doing anything open or violent against us, says a U.S. intelligence official. In other words, they are not supporting the bombers and the shooters and whatnot. They don't want a situation where the United States can say, you guys are helping our guys get killed, therefore we can invade you. This is all quiet on the QT, mostly had to do with money, moral support. Ironically, U.S. officials said the United States and Iran share a long-term goal of a stable, secular, and unified Iraq, where leaders are selected in democratic elections, because Iraq's Shiite majority would almost certainly give Shiite leaders a decisive edge. Iranian analysts agree. If things deteriorate security-wise and the danger of ethnic tensions increases, it would create an unstable neighborhood and the Americans might stay. Then the whole idea of Shiite influence and power will diminish. This according to a Tehran University political scientist now at the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. And chaos becomes a danger. And the last thing Iran wants is chaos, whether the U.S. stays or leaves. So they're covering their bets. They're covering their bets. Who would have thought? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Nora in Humboldt County, California is on the line. Hey, Nora, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I'm calling about the 9/11 and your last guest.
Mm-hmm.
I've been researching this for, well, it's going to be 3 years pretty soon, and there's no doubt in my mind that, be it a shadow government within our government or whatever, perpetrated these attacks on the United States, on us Americans. I have absolutely no doubt. I hope Michael Moore's movie gets well seen by the American public, where they start to question what actually happened. This is the first attack that the government has made on its own people within our borders.
Mm.
And I think it's time for Americans to wake up, really wake up here.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree, and I'm not sure that the 9/11 Commission is going to be a great help in that.
Oh, I doubt that. I don't think that they're going to do much. Thomas Keene has Saudi interests and so on and so forth, and I'm not saying the Saudis are guilty at all, but
well, I think they are. I think the Saudis... I don't think they're directly responsible for 9/11, but I think the Saudis sowed the seeds of the wind that became the whirlwind that was 9/11. And I agree with you, Nora.
I really would like to hear Sybil Edwards, because she did so many of those translations. And
yeah, it would be interesting. We got a boogie here. Thanks for the call, Nora. I appreciate it. Tom Harbin, 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. It's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new, and you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Switching 5 lights in your home could help save a lot of energy. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. People's homes are using a growing share of the world's energy. That means a growing share of the responsibility to conserve it. Janet Sawin is a researcher with the World Watch Institute. Sawin says a third of all the energy consumed in the world is used in buildings. And Sawin says this share is expected to double by the year 2030, in part because of more appliances and computers. She says Americans are also living in larger houses, which increases energy use.
Between 1975 and 2000, U.S. homes grew about 38%, the average new homes in the United States. Our new homes now are, on average, about double the size of average homes in Europe or Japan.
Sawin says people can do simple things to cut their energy use at home.
People would be surprised to know how easy it is to save a little bit of energy. In your home, for example, you can replace regular light bulbs with compact fluorescent light bulbs. My husband and I did that when we first moved into our home and our kitchen, and we now use about a sixth as much energy to light our kitchen for about the same amount of light. If every household in the United States replaced the 5 bulbs that they use most with compact fluorescents, we could actually shut down about 20 large power plants in this country, so that's pretty significant.
Sawin says individuals also need to take responsibility for their energy use in their workplaces, too. She says you might be able to turn off unused lights, turn down thermostats, and take other actions that save energy, as long as your boss and coworkers agree. The fringe benefit, of course, is lower energy bills, both at home and at the office. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Is the Pentagon spying in America? This is downright spooky. This is, you know, the founders of this nation. It was one of the big debates, of course, in the founding of the country. But many of the founders thought that we should not have a standing army during times of peace. And that during times of war, everyone should be part of the army. In other words, we should have a citizen's militia, like they do in Switzerland right now. I mean, this isn't a totally alien idea. It's something that's been done before in other countries. And the reason why is because as Jefferson pointed out, is when countries have been overthrown from within, it's almost always come from the military. Think Napoleon, for example. Anyhow, last February, Newsweek, from the current issue of Newsweek, an article by Michael Isikoff, who's a very, very competent investigative correspondent. Last February, two Army counterintelligence agents showed up at the University of Texas Law School and demanded to see the roster from a conference on Islamic law held a few days earlier. Their reason? They were trying to track down students who the agents claimed had been asking suspicious questions. "I felt like I was in Law and Order," said one student after being grilled by one of the agents. Now, this isn't the big deal. The big deal is that they may not have identified themselves. And here's the kicker. Without any public hearing or debate, Newsweek has learned defense officials recently slipped a provision into a bill before Congress that would vastly expand the Pentagon's ability to gather intelligence inside the United States. And not only that, the new provision, approved in closed session last month by the Senate Intelligence Committee, would eliminate one big restriction that they comply with the Privacy Act that requires government officials seeking information from a resident to disclose who they are and what they want the information for. So the Pentagon can now come and interrogate you, pretending to be the local police department, pretending to be the meter reader, pretending to be the FBI, pretending to be the best friend of your next-door neighbor. This is, now, Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman says, well, it's a new world we live in. You got to understand that. But don't we want America to be America? I mean, don't we want to continue to be the beacon to the world? Watchdog groups see potentially alarming mission creep. This is giving them the authority to spy on Americans, says Kate Martin. It's all been done with no public discussion in the dark of night. Oh, boy, do we need to change this administration. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new report from Human Rights Watch accuses the Coca-Cola Company of profiting off child labor in El Salvador. The report details the widespread use of children in the sugarcane fields of that country. Up to 30,000 kids as young as 8 are involved in the backbreaking work of planting and harvesting, for which they are paid little and receive no medical care when injured. Coke drinks are made from the sugar processed from the cane, but the company does not own or deal directly with the plantations. Human Rights Watch hopes the company will use its power and influence to force Salvadoran cane farmers to comply with labor law, which in El Salvador sets the minimum working age at 14.
After contract negotiations fell through, more than 1,500 members of the United Auto Workers Local 997 walked off the job on Thursday at two local Maytag plants in Newton, Iowa. Maytag's corporate headquarters is based in Newton and employs 10% of the city's residents, now out of work due to the strike. At issue is healthcare retirement benefits and Maytag's proposal to continue massive layoffs, downsizing hundreds of salaried employees as part of a national corporate restructuring program, in addition to the 1,300 people laid off in the past year and a half. Maytag announced that it knew the work stoppage was coming and built up a surplus inventory. Local president Pat Tweed speaking from the picket line at the plant gate.
Maytag and UAW were a valuable part of this community, and, you know, we're a majority of what this community is about as far as the commerce and people spending money and buying houses, cars.
Workers are hoping for a speedy resolution, unlike the last major strike at the Newton plant in 1971 that lasted for 5 months.
Victory for banana workers in Colombia. A two-week strike of 16,000 at plantations there ended yesterday when the growers agreed to allow farm workers to remain employees. They'd gone on strike to protest a proposal that would have classified them as seasonal workers and made them more susceptible to hiring and firing at the whim of a plantation owner. Banana planters and pickers will also receive wage increases, including adjustments for inflation. This staves off a potential shortage, as Colombia is the third largest exporter of bananas in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A recent report by the U.S. Department of Labor suggests that more jobs are lost due to domestic competition than to workers overseas. According to the Labor Department, of the 200,000-plus jobs lost in the first quarter of 2004, only about 4,600, or 2%, were due to offshore outsourcing. But the report didn't include small-scale layoffs in its numbers and relied on management to accurately self-report their figures.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Excellent news, Americans! U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing, or right-shoring, to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
Hi, I'm Gunnery Sergeant Arlie Ermey, United States Marine Corps. While our armed forces defend our freedom, their families shoulder household duties and emergencies alone. To help, the veterans of foreign wars and Vermont American brand Bits and Blades have created the Unmet Needs Program.
Rufus Forrest here, VFW Senior Administrator. Please support the Unmet Needs Program by purchasing Vermont American Bits and Blades. A portion of each purchase goes to help families.
Visit unmetneeds.com and buy Vermont American brand Bits and Blades. Thank you and Semper Fi. Hoorah!
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. The top of the third hour of our program. We now hear the rest of the story from this Kentucky National Guardsman. Maybe you remember the original story. His name was Baker, Sean Baker. He was a sergeant in the 438th Military Police Company in Guantanamo Bay. One of the things that I find fascinating, now we've got, Janet, what is it, Karpinski, the one-star general who was in charge of the military police in Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, saying, it really wasn't my fault. It was this guy who came in from Guantanamo. And what I want to know, Guantanamo had, we set up our first concentration camp in the United States. Adolf Hitler set up his first concentration camp in Oranienburg, Germany, about a month and a half, 2 months after the Reichstaggebouge, the parliament building, was burned. The terrorist attack that justified the passage of the law for the patriotic law for the protection of the German people, with a four-year sunset provision that allowed police to open people's mail and listen into their telephone conversations and all sorts of things. I mean, it was essentially the Patriot Act. And then of course, he built the first concentration camp. And it was a prison camp. I mean, this was long before the death camps were even being discussed. This was in 1933. And about a month after 9/11, Halliburton built Camp X-Ray down at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Isn't that ironic, by the way? You and I can't visit Cuba, but the United States can have a military base there. Anyhow, the question that I want to know the answer to, the thing that really gets me, that has me baffled, is why aren't the media asking what's going on in Guantanamo Bay? I mean, we've got all these pictures out of Abu Ghraib. We've got no shortage, including a one-star general who was in charge of the prison, of people saying, well, they were just doing in Iraq what they were doing in Guantanamo. In fact, I'll share with you in a few minutes a little bit more about that. The story gets even more interesting. But back to Mr. Baker. Let's just wrap this thing up first. Sean Baker claims that this was in January of last year, and so this is some time ago, right? This is a year and a half ago. That he was in the military police down at Guantanamo. He was one of the guys, guarding the soldiers, and that some rocket scientist among the MPs said, I've got an idea. Why don't we have a training exercise? Try to make it as real as possible, and we'll have an American guy. We'll have one of our guys dress up in the orange jumpsuit that all the Guantanamo guys, the prisoners are wearing down there, although they're not really prisoners because they're not covered by the Geneva Convention and they don't have access to the Bill of Rights. So they're the enemy combatants, this new magic word that George W. has invented to mean that we can completely ignore all American and international laws and treaties. Anyhow, they said, why don't we put him in an orange jumpsuit and have him try to escape or something like that, and not tell our soldiers that he's one of us. Just see what happens. See if they're doing their job. See if they're paying attention. Let's check out security down there. So Baker says this, an article from Lex18.com, which I believe is a television station in Scott County, and I'm not sure the state. Baker, actually, is probably Kentucky, because this is a local Kentucky story. They're telling the story of this guy, this local guy. Baker says an officer in charge issued the order because he wanted the training to be as real as possible. Baker said what took place next happened at the hands of four U.S. soldiers he believed didn't know he was one of them and has changed his life forever. Quote, this is Baker speaking now. USGI wearing an orange jumpsuit. They grabbed my hands, my legs, twisted me up, and unfortunately, one of the individuals got up on my back from behind and put pressure down on me while I was face down. Then he, the same individual, reached around and began to choke me and press my head down against the steel floor. After several seconds, 20 or 30 seconds, seemed like an eternity because I couldn't breathe. When I couldn't breathe, I began to panic, and I gave the code word I was supposed to give to stop the exercise, which was red. But apparently nobody had told these soldiers that there was a code word. But Baker says the beating didn't stop. That individual slammed my head against the floor and continued to choke me. Somehow I got enough air out that I muttered, "I am a U.S. soldier! I'm a U.S. soldier!" And then one of the other guys who was one of these other four soldiers who was participating in beating the bejesus out of this guy noticed that while he was wearing the orange jumpsuit, he was wearing U.S. government-issued boots, which the prisoners don't wear, of course, only the GIs do, and stopped it. Said, "Hey, wait a minute, maybe this guy isn't a prisoner. Maybe he's really one of ours." Baker then left the military for unexplained reasons. Now, here's nearly 15 months after that day and countless medical treatments at Walter Reed Hospital. Baker is now medically retired from the military, but still suffers. On Wednesday, this would have been about 3 weeks ago, the U.S. military, while acknowledging an injury to Baker took place during the exercise, is disputing his claim, saying he left for unrelated reasons. He didn't leave because we caused him brain damage by beating him senseless simply because we thought he was one of those prisoners. No, that wasn't it. Baker says he feels betrayed by what happened to him. Well, here's the as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. From the Associated Press last week, reversing itself, the Army said Tuesday that a GI was discharged partly because of a head injury he suffered while posing as an uncooperative detainee during a training exercise at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The Army had previously said Specialist Sean Baker's medical discharge in April was unrelated to the injury he received last year at the detention center where the U.S. holds suspected terrorists. Now, what this tells us is that our soldiers feel, the guys running Guantanamo Bay feel, that using the kind of violence and force that will cause permanent injury, and in this case, brain damage, is just fine. Just fine. Oh, but, you know, the right winger, with the supporters of Bush, I want to say, because, see, even true conservatives would say, you know, this is wrong. But anyhow, oh, but, you know, these are terrible people. I mean, we captured them on the battlefield in Afghanistan, and they may know about other 9-11s and their affiliate. They liked Osama bin Laden this guy, Berg, got his head cut off, you know, and they don't play by the rules. And the logic of that, of course, then somehow becomes, therefore, we shouldn't play by the rules. I mean, we're the ones that essentially set the rules for the world. See, here's my concern. My concern is not so much, frankly, that by, you know, beating up, torturing, abusing, to use the languages of the administration, our prisoners in the 100 plus military camps, detention centers, concentration camps, prisons, whatever you want to call them, that we have around the world, that we are necessarily going to, like, accidentally hurt some innocent guy. I mean, that obviously happened at Abu Ghraib. The Red Cross said 80-90% of the people in there. The military said maybe 70-80% were just swept up in operations. They weren't just, you know, the plumber, the butcher, the baker. They were just, you know, local guys that got, they were the right age. and their skin was the right color, and they had the right look. You know, they looked Arab. And I think it's a terrible thing that they have been subjected to this. You know, I want to be on the record about that. But that's not my biggest concern. My biggest concern is that other nations, not and Iraq among them, by the way, other nations who are experimenting with democracy. See, the Europeans all look at this and they go, this is horrible. These guys are nuts. We have been condemned in the United Nations and in the press of various countries unrelentingly. They understand the horror and evil of this. But there's 100 or more countries in the world that are what are called emerging democracies, where the rule of law, the rule of democratic law, is not that well established. And perhaps more important, or even most important, that thought virus, that meme, that idea, that contagious idea that humans have rights has not yet taken hold. That in those countries, they will look at our, at this new behavior of the United States, something we've never done before in 227 years of our history, and say, oh, that's how it's done. And as a consequence of that, we have set back on a worldwide basis, in my opinion. Not just the idea of advancing human rights and appropriate protection of prisoners, those things in the Bill of Rights, of course, those all have to be there. But the foundations, the ultimate foundations of democracy. That's what this administration is doing. And doing in a very destructive fashion. 20 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartmann radio program. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. You and me, we'll do it.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartmann. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartmann, in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes.
And welcome back, 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. There's more to this story. I mean, there's more to this story. This continues. I got a few other things I want to share with you. First, though, let's go to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in and be on the program. Roberta in Ojo Caliente.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Tom. I think I'm going to change my name to Roberta Rousseau after my latest patron saint, the man who brought the heart, soul, the spirit, and love of nature into the people's cause.
Have you actually ever read Rousseau, Roberta?
Well, I'm reading Rousseau and Revolution by Will and Ariel Durant,
mm-hmm.
and it's most enlightening. I'm fascinated.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating some of the things he said. I just trying to read his
the
original writing
contract
is really
is the,
a challenge.
Is the thing I was hoping you would read, because I think it's, you know, it's where the phrase consent of the governed. And by the way, I just received from Garshon Siegel, who says hello, the article about you, and I'm reading some of your stuff. I think it's interesting about the theory about democracy existing even in nature. I think that was also Rousseau's precept. But anyway, Garshon's newspaper is the most radical in Santa Fe, in which there are many, and we're well served to have him here. And
yeah, he does a great job.
A good take on you. Yeah. So anyway, what I wanted to bring up was about personalities. Bush, the Bush thing. You may know it was mentioned quite a while ago by another communicaster that he and Kerry are actually distant cousins through the Forbes family. Did you know that?
No, but I mean, who's a distant cousin to whom? I mean,
New England royalty.
Yeah.
But. I'm also concerned about this thing with the Republic. The ship of state, as Plato would say, is so sunk in the muck, in the mire. The top of the heap is really nothing but a heap of worms. And, you know, about bringing it back, do you really think it's possible? Because I think the idea of the Republic in the first 13 colonies was the idea of a small duchy or dukey. Anyway, I think the only way we'll get it back, we'll get any semblance of a republic back, because do you really think people with that much power are going to give it up because people march into a booth and throw a switch?
It happened in 1936.
I think, hello?
Yeah, it happened in 1936.
Okay, well, I think all of the states should secede and have their own republics.
Yeah, you know, there's a huge movement here in the state of Vermont for that. There's a guy who's written a book about it. He's doing all the local radio talk shows. He's got this whole Vermont secessionist movement, because we were an independent republic before we joined the United States. Texas and Vermont are the only two states that actually were republics. And still, and the Constitution that we have right now is still the original Constitution under which we were a republic. And
yeah. Well, you know, the republic of an empire is an oxymoron. I mean, really, I think it's gone.
Yeah, Vermont actually, interesting trivia, Vermont declared war on Adolf Hitler 6 months on Germany, 6 months before the United States did.
Oh, isn't that fun?
Yeah.
All right, it's good to know.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, I love it when you expound knowledge.
Okay, well, thank you, Roberta. It's great to hear from you, and I love it when you call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. A California National Guardsman now says three fellow soldiers brazenly abused detainees. I'm harping on this. We are setting the example for the world. You know, the people in the emerging democracies in Africa, in South America, in Central America, in Asia, they are looking to us for example. Sergeant Greg Ford said he repeatedly had to revive prisoners who had passed out, and once saw a soldier stand on the back of a handcuffed detainee's neck and pull his arms until they popped out of his sockets. Ford told the Associated Press that when he reported the problems last June to his commanding officers, they pressured him to drop his claims. Immediately within the same conversation, the command said, "Nope, you're delusional, you're crazy, it never happened." "They gave me 30 seconds to withdraw my request for an investigation," Ford said. "I stood my ground." 49 years old, 18 years as a state prison guard, 30 years of military experience. We need to listen to these people. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new report from Human Rights Watch accuses the Coca-Cola Company of profiting off child labor in El Salvador. The report details the widespread use of children in the sugarcane fields of that country. Up to 30,000 kids as young as 8 are involved in the backbreaking work of planting and harvesting, for which they are paid little and receive no medical care when injured. Coke drinks are made from the sugar processed from the cane, but the company does not own or deal directly with the plantations. Human Rights Watch hopes the company will use its power and influence to force Salvadoran cane farmers to comply with labor law, which in El Salvador sets the minimum working age at 14.
After contract negotiations fell through, more than 1,500 members of the United Auto Workers Local 997 walked off the job on Thursday at two local Maytag plants in Newton, Iowa. Maytag's corporate headquarters is based in Newton and employs 10% of the city's residents, now out of work due to the strike. At issue is healthcare retirement benefits and Maytag's proposal to continue massive layoffs, downsizing hundreds of salaried employees as part of a national corporate restructuring program, in addition to the 1,300 people laid off in the past year and a half. Maytag announced that it knew the work stoppage was coming and built up a surplus inventory. Local president Pat Tweed speaking from the picket line at the plant gate.
Maytag and UAW were a valuable part of this community, and, you know, we're a majority of what this community is about as far as the commerce and people spending money and buying houses, cars.
Workers are hoping for a speedy resolution, unlike the last major strike at the Newton plant in 1971 that lasted for 5 months.
Victory for banana workers in Colombia. A two-week strike of 16,000 at plantations there ended yesterday when the growers agreed to allow farm workers to remain employees. They'd gone on strike to protest a proposal that would have classified them as seasonal workers and made them more susceptible to hiring and firing at the whim of a plantation owner. Banana planters and pickers will also receive wage increases, including adjustments for inflation. This staves off a potential shortage, as Colombia is the third largest exporter of bananas in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report by the U.S. Department of Labor suggests that more jobs are lost due to domestic competition than to workers overseas. According to the Labor Department, of the 200,000-plus jobs lost in the first quarter of 2004, only about 4,600, or 2%, were due to offshore outsourcing. But the report didn't include small-scale layoffs in its numbers and relied on management to accurately self-report their figures.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
So here's this guy, a California National Guardsman, Sergeant Greg Ford. His assigned job at the prison in Iraq was to revive people who had passed out as the result of interrogations. To revive people who had passed out. Again, he said he once saw a soldier stand on the back of a handcuffed detainee's neck and pull his arms until they popped out of their sockets. Told the AP about it. He told the military about it. They told him he was delusional. He says, "You weren't supposed to stand on their neck or put lit cigarettes in their ears. Twice I had to pull burning cigarettes out of detainees' ears." It's quoting from Ford. He said, "Look, this is not going to go over well with the community of Samara." This is what he's trying to tell the other soldiers, you know, if we abuse these guys, and they're not going to be in jail for life. They might just be, you know, the guy who owns the cigarette store down the street. And we let them free, and they go back and tell their families what we did. And their friends. You think they might start shooting at our soldiers? I mean, this is another one of the scandals. I mean, it's, you know, setting aside, although I think it's the biggest issue, the example that we're creating for the world, by saying that it is possible for a modern democracy, to ignore both domestic and international laws and conventions against torture. But even going beyond that, I wonder why the folks who, like I, but on the right, support our troops, now they support the war as well, I don't. But support our troops. I mean, the front page of today's Burlington Free Press, the local newspaper, half, maybe two-thirds, it ran below the fold, of the front page of today's newspaper, great big picture, 6x10 picture of a coffin being carried across a field here in Vermont, of a young man, 23 years old, as I recall, who died in Iraq, whose funeral was yesterday. And it was, and, you know, it continued on inside the paper. There was a whole page about it. They interviewed the family. None of this was presented in an anti-war way at all. It was just, here we are, remembering our, well, the way the newspaper presented it, our heroes. And I think these guys are heroes. Anybody who's willing to say, yes, I will sign up to defend my country. Now we have is in my mind a hero. Now we have the unfortunate reality that the majority of the guardsmen who are taking the majority of the casualties, by the way, and this guy was one of them. And I don't mean this to diminish his memory in any way. Signed up, perhaps, you know, primarily out of patriotism, but also signed up because you get educational benefits and you get a little money on the weekends. And, you know, I mean, they're actually still running the ads on TV here. One weekend a month, 1 week a year, 1 month a year, whatever it is, you know. Join the National Guard. So here's this guy. He's a state prison guard out in California, 18 years. He's been in the National Guard. He was in the military before this. Then he went into the Guard afterwards. 30 years military experience. And he was part of the 223rd. This is a base from out of San Francisco. Who arrived in Iraq last spring and spread out in teams of 3 to 6 interrogators, Arab linguists, and counterintelligence officers. Whenever a prisoner collapsed, he says, his team's leader would emerge and say, Greg, I think we got another accident. This guy not only is a prison guard and a reservist, but he also has had medical training. He's got EMT training. He says, then I'd have to go, and then I'd have to bring them out and revive them. Ford said nobody interviewed him while he was in Iraq, and he does not think anybody has interviewed the Iraqi detainees. After he went to his superiors and told them about what was going on, and they told him he was delusional and gave him 30 seconds to retract it, he refused to. They punished him, basically. Sent him back to the United States. Actually, first they sent him to Germany, where they put him in the loony bin. They sent him to a psychiatric hospital. This guy needs to go to a psychiatric hospital. How dare he tell the truth about what's going on? Well, the psychiatric hospital in Germany decided that there was nothing wrong with him, so they sent him to a psychiatric facility in San Antonio, Texas. They also determined that there was nothing wrong with him. And now, you know, we've got here Al-Qaeda claims to kidnap American. This was a couple days ago. It was on Sunday. Islamic radicals in Saudi Arabia allied with Al-Qaeda said Saturday they'd kidnapped a U.S. military contractor in Riyadh. Have you noticed, by the way, that when Jimmy Carter was president, those of you old enough to remember, and the hostages were taken in Iran, that every day we were reminded of how many people were held hostage, that Carter was, you know, out there every day, on he or his people on TV saying, please pray for these people, you know, tie the yellow ribbons, let's make a national movement. I mean, it was political suicide. And George Bush going over there and cutting that deal. We'll give you missiles if you'll hold the hostages until the election so that Reagan and I can get elected. Came to be known as the Iran-Contra scandal. Anyhow, Islamic radicals in Saudi Arabia now say they've kidnapped a U.S. military contractor. And another American was gunned down at his house. And the radicals in Saudi Arabia, Islamic radicals, I mean, that's how they refer to them in the newspapers. Let's say they are. I'm willing to go along with that. Just like I think there are Christian radicals and Jewish radicals and Islam and Hindu radicals and, you know, take your choice. Anyhow, they said... This guy, Paul Johnson, Paul M. Johnson, Jr., 49, he works for Lockheed Martin. They said they're going to treat him the same way that the prisoners were treated at Abu Ghraib. The group said in a statement it was acting to avenge U.S. mistreatment of Muslim detainees. We have our legal right to treat American hostages the same way they treat our people, the group said, mentioning the Iraqi prison and Guantanamo Bay. Now, I know that the response that the right-wing talk show hosts would say would make to this story, if they ever were to discuss it on the air, was, come on. These guys cut people's heads off. They torture people. They kill people. They're just saying that they're going to treat this guy the way that the prisoners in the prison were treated. I don't disagree. However, we have now set a standard. And just because some loony guys in Saudi Arabia are quoting that standard, and we all know that they wouldn't have followed it anyway, that's not the real issue here. I mean, that's the issue that that Hannity's going to try to make on his show. That's not the real issue. The real issue is that all around the world, emerging democracies are looking at us and saying, how do you handle people? What does a democracy do with prisoners? Should a democratic nation, should a constitutionally limited republic have concentration camps? Should it have people in prison who are beyond the rule of law? Internet Weekly report. This is the lighthearted side of the story. Then I've got the other side. Arlington, Virginia, IWR News parody. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay was arrested today at Kenmore Middle School for allegedly extorting lunch money from students. The Arlington Bunko Squad at first thought the hammer, which is what they call the former inhaler of pesticides and bug killer, Tom DeLay, was just some pervert peddling pornography to the kids. But we're surprised to discover that the suspect was actually extorting money from the students in return for not cutting funding to their band, cheerleading, and football programs. Mr. DeLay protested his arrest, claiming that extorting money from citizens, regardless of age, was his God-given right. Look, he said, this is no different than what I do all day long in Congress. It's a parody. It really didn't happen. I mean, it's a funny thing. But here's what's really happened. I don't know if you've noticed or if you've seen the news reports, but Tom DeLay may be in big trouble. And it has to do with these charities that he has set up. This from the Houston Press, the Houston newspaper. An article by Sarah Fenske, Sweet Charity. It says, for years, the subhead is, for years, Tom DeLay has used nonprofits to help himself. Now the heat is on. Now, this, keep in mind, this is a Texas story coming out of a Texas newspaper about the Texas congressman. On that day last September, Congressman Tom DeLay and his wife Christine showed they can still mount the perfect photo op. She wore blue, he and her fingernails wore red. And they both flashed the smiles of political veterans. The occasion was a big one. After a few years of talking, planning, and $6 million of fundraising, the couple was breaking ground for the Oaks at Rio Bend, a residential campus for foster kids and their families. The DeLays had come up with the idea. The DeLay Foundation, their nonprofit arm, had raised most of the seed money, and the George Foundation had donated a 30-acre site in Richmond. Since then, the project has officially been under construction. As the Sugarland congressman himself boasted in an editorial in the Houston Chronicle on April 21st. And so it's jarring to drive out to see the place. 8 months after the ground was ceremonially broken and construction supposedly started. You know you've arrived only because of the big sign facing Pultar Road. It announces the future home of the Oaks at Rio Bend. Then offers a rendering of the promised land. Little villas with dormer windows. Beyond the sign, nothing. Not a villa, not a chapel, not a sewer pipe, not even a clearing, writes Sarah Fenske in the Houston Press. The weedy grasses have grown waist high. The barbed wire that lines the property is rusted and mashed down in places. Someone has fired 6 BB-sized holes into the back of a sign. An empty bush tall boy, that's a can of beer, patrols the perimeter. So she went looking for some information, tried to talk to his brother, who, by the way, is an ex-convict. He was not available for comment. Another one of DeLay's brothers, who is getting rich in Washington as a lobbyist, wouldn't return phone calls. She went to his mother's house in Richmond, Virginia. 80-year-old Maxine DeLay knocked on her door. But Maxine said that the closest contact she's had with her son, Tom DeLay, is by watching C-SPAN. Republican family values, don't you love them? Well, it gets a little more complicated. Then in 2000, the DeLay Foundation hired 2 East Coast fundraisers. Washington Strategies is run by DeLay's former deputy chief of staff. The other, WMR Consulting, has done significant work for both of DeLay's political action committees. Well, that's interesting. The political strategists proved adept at raising charitable money. In the 2000 fiscal year, the foundation reported $972,663 in grants, most in large sums. One contribution alone was a staggering $250,000. In 2001, the DeLay Foundation hosted 3 events, netting $1.3 million. Its fundraisers took about 10% off the top, which is not unreasonable. But then came along this campaign finance law. And as the Dallas Morning News quoted, an unnamed lobbyist explained, Tom DeLay has a whole package you can buy into, starting at $15,000 or $25,000, going up to $75,000 or $100,000. If you buy into one of these big-time packages, you're going to be invited to the train. A lot of members there, very few lobbyists, very exclusive. But campaign or finance reform law made that illegal. I mean, basically, he's using these charities as a front for lobbying, to get money from lobbyists. And like DeLay's political committee has done once in 2000, the charity planned to host a series of events at the Republican National Convention. And anyhow, it goes on and on with this thing. And I'm not going to bore you with much more of it other than to say that it sure is starting to look like Tom DeLay was using these charities in the early years of his political career as a way of making people think that he was a good guy, and now as a way of taking money from people who want to suck up to Republican legislators. And he may have committed a serious crime in doing it. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. Americans. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Courtship is a noisy affair for insects that wait 17 years for a chance to find a mate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. This year, billions of brown bugs called cicadas are making themselves known across much of the eastern United States. For the cicadas, all that noise is the sound of romance. Mike Rope is an entomologist at the University of Maryland. He says there are many kinds of cicadas, and the ones that are drawing attention this year are called Brood 10 periodical cicadas. They hide underground for 17 years and then emerge in huge numbers. They climb into trees by the thousands, and every one of the males will start to sing.
A large collection of chorusing males in the treetops could reach as much as 100 decibels. And just as a reference, this would be the sound level of perhaps a noisy lawnmower engine. So this really is quite loud.
Raup says males sing to attract mates, and they're equipped for maximum volume.
The sound is produced by a very, very ingenious evolutionary adaptation. There's a small membrane on the side of their abdomen just below the wings of the male. This is called a timbal. There are muscles that vibrate the timbal very rapidly, much the same way you might vibrate a drum head, and this causes sound. The other very clever thing is the abdomen of the male is more or less hollow, and we believe this acts as an amplification chamber to actually increase the volume of sound that's produced by the timbal organ.
6 weeks after the female cicadas lay eggs, cicada nymphs will hatch and quickly burrow underground. Raup says they'll spend the next 17 years sucking on tree roots until it's time again to come back into the open. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hey, George, pack your gear. We're telling you the end is near. Hey, George, pack your gear. We're telling you the end is near. Your home is on the range. It's time for us to make a change. Hey, George, pack your gear. We're telling you the end is near. Maybe not.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you.
Find a new career.
Had a little clip from Jim Tur's BlueCanyonProductions.com, I believe, or BlueCanyonSatire.com. Anyhow, I've got our quote for the day. I've saved it to the end to share with you because it raises some important and interesting questions that I think we all need to listen to and think about. And that the administration, of course, should have been thinking about for some time. This is a quote that comes from the New York Times. It was published on April 13th, 1991. That is during the administration of George Herbert Walker Bush. I'd have to look at a calendar to see if this was before, during, or after the Gulf War. I don't have that date on the tip of my tongue, but I suspect it was afterwards when everybody in the Bush administration, and Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense back then, as I recall, everybody in the Bush administration was doing a huge CYA. He says, or explaining why they didn't go into Iraq. He says, this a quote from Dick Cheney, the New York Times, 4/13/91, from Dick Cheney. If you're going to go in and try and topple Saddam Hussein, you have to go to Baghdad. Once you got Baghdad, it's not clear what you do with it. It's not clear what kind of government you would put in place of the one that's currently there now. Is it going to be a Shia regime, a Sunni regime, or a Kurdish regime? Or one that tilts toward the Baathists, or one that tilts towards the Islamic fundamentalists? How much credibility is that government going to have if it's set up by the United States military when it's there? How long does the United States military have to stay to protect the people that sign on for that government? And what happens to it once we leave? Dick Cheney, New York Times, April 13, 1991. Our quote, I think our true quote for the day is, Abby Hoffman, democracy is not something you believe in or a place you hang your hat, but it's something you do. You participate. If you stop doing it, democracy crumbles. It's just that simple. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Adam Cohen for engineering it. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. To Shelby for getting us on radiopower.org and streaming around the planet. Ben at White Rose Society for the archives. Mike Toth for our archives there on our website. Thanks to our sponsors, in particular Small Dog Electronics. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Jay for writing and composing the theme music you're hearing right now. And thanks to you for listening. Tune in again same time tomorrow. See you then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.